And hello, it is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. Today we have a new program. It is called Every Word Has Power. And the host is Yvonne Oswell. Welcome, Yvonne.
Hello, Lori. Thank you.
So we thought we'd start this new show with the talk on your book, because we did have you on with Intuitive Literacy.
Yes.
And now you're starting your own show. And this show, although the show did talk about your book, this one, let's really, really delve into it and get a really clear picture of what you've been talking about and what you've been writing about.
Right.
That is, you know, pretty instrumental in helping people change their lives. I mean, this book can really assist a lot of people to
really
shift or switch.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. The work I've been doing, I realized that your self-talk is 100% of your results. And it's really that little voice inside your head that you need to change. Mm-hmm. And before you're 7 years old, you hear those 150,000 negative commands from parents, you know, don't do this, stop doing that, you can't have everything, etc. And, you know, our job is as adults to rethink those programs and re-engineer them so that we actually produce positive programs for ourselves and our kids.
What sort of brought you into this? Before we get right into the meat of the book, what kind of got you on this journey? What was it that sort of...
A good question. I think because I had such a not good childhood, and my father was really, you know, I mean, why do we do the work we do? It's because we have our childhoods, right? My father would come in from work, and I would run to him shouting, Daddy, Daddy, and he would just hit me and say, that's before you start, you know. And the things he said to me were really, really cruel. And it wasn't until later I thought about them, I thought, I never want to have a child and say that kind of thing to her or him. And so I was 42 by the time I even had a child. And I was very clear I'd done a lot of work on myself and made sure that, you know, when I brought my child up, that I was really thinking positively, talking positively to her. That no didn't exit my lips for 3 years. It was the least easy thing I ever did. And then when she was 10 months old, I remember her tugging at my skirt and saying, Mommy, Mommy, and crying. And I remember turning around and just about to say to her, oh, if you don't stop crying, I'll give you something to cry about. And I thought, wow, I was about to say that. I was about to repeat the patterns. And at that moment, I made myself a vow, you know what? I will absolutely change everything that was ever said to me. And instead of saying anything, I would think about it before it came out of my mouth. I would have it edited so it was positive. So, you know, and I put her in the other room, said, I'll be with you in a moment, my sweetheart. And literally from that day forward, everything was thought through. So it was very conscious parenting.
It's a hard thing to do.
It's not easy at all.
At the beginning.
Yeah, switch that, Laurie. yeah, we're going to talk about switch. And exactly, that was literally, you know, if I wanted to take something away from her, I would give her something back in the other hand. And my husband would say, why are you doing that? And I'd say, because I wanted to know psychologically that if I take something away from her, she gets something better back. So it was literally every single interaction was positive and every interaction was thought through. And it only takes a few seconds. It takes 10 seconds in your head to rethink it and, you know, just stop for one moment and redo it. And it really makes a difference. And it took quite a while to stop the negative thoughts coming into my head, that first 3 years particularly. And then it became automatic that I would go to what was positive, you know. And the proof was in the pudding that she's a great kid. She's always done straight A's. She gets on with other people really well. It's really been a fantastic part of my life that I could actually bring someone up in a whole different childhood than my own. And of course, I wanted to pass that knowledge on.
So you wrote this very powerful book. And, you know, there are enough things in this book to have you working on them for
forever,
a long time.
Lots of tips. Quick tips.
Lots
too,
of tips. Yeah. So let's talk about the power of words. I mean, they say that, you know, it's 7% of what we...
7% of what we say, according to Robert Birdwhistle, is what we communicate to others verbally. 55% is body language, 38% is tonality. And that 7% of words, while it's important in your communication with other people, it's the 100% of the words you speak to yourself which produces your results. Because no matter what you're saying or thinking, if you're saying one thing and thinking something differently, your results are going to come out the way you're thinking them. So, you know, they've proved it in sports psychology. They've proved it in every area of life. They even did a study in the US where they had bedridden people, and they told half of them to do nothing and half of them to imagine doing exercise every day for a month. And they found after a month that these people actually had muscle improvement.
Just from the imagining.
Yeah, isn't it amazing? It's just, it all happens in your head.
Yeah.
And what you believe to be real becomes the truth. And that was, you know, it's amazing. So, for instance, if you look up fairies on the internet, you'll get 2 million sites of them, right? Whether they exist or not really doesn't matter. It's the unconscious mind is exactly like the internet. It's a servo mechanism. It does not have thoughts of its own unless it's to do with preserving the body, in which case it overrides.
Okay.
So it's like a Norton antivirus. You know, you'll be on the computer and then you'll suddenly see a thing say, virus detected. Hold on a moment, we're sorting it out, right? That's exactly what your unconscious mind does. It literally sits there waiting for you to give it instructions, and it carries out programs from previous instructions. Then if there's any kind of threat of any kind that it perceives, even if it's an imagined threat, it will act accordingly and become the, you know, the instrument and stop everything and change direction.
Hmm.
Very fascinating.
It is. And you also talk that we use the middle brain, which is the part of our brain, not only that it's 65,000 years old, but it's the part of our brain that has those more negative associations or thoughts.
Right.
And
right.
beliefs.
The limbic brain. It actually goes back 200,000 years to when we were living in trees. And it was a very patriarchal society. So there was very much, you know, the boss and the workers and the people that had different roles. Very commanding society. And that was from necessity because, of course, there were lions and tigers and things around that were threatening. So they had to work together as a group. These days, we don't have those threats, but we're still using the middle brain, which is, you know, a lot of it is not necessary anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And the prefrontal cortex is the part that started developing 65,000 years ago when we started speaking verbally. And of course, that's the part. If we can learn habitually to live in that part of the brain, then that's going to make everybody really feeling good and optimistic all the time.
And how do we do that?
Basically, the expression keep your chin up.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, if you physiologically keep your chin up and your back straight, it's impossible to go into a low energy emotion. Because you're actually accessing that front brain, the prefrontal cortex, the neocortex, it's called the new rind. Now, what happens is with the techniques in the book, I teach you how to, you know, stay ahead of what's happening all the time. What happens when you get low energy emotions? And it simply says that you've gone off track a little bit. So your emotions are your unconscious mind's messaging system. And it's literally, it's almost like a little text message it's giving you. You know, if it's a low energy emotion around, it says, nah, we need to test this through a bit more. We need to, learn a lesson here. If there's a high energy emotion around, like happiness, joy, excitement, that says, great, go ahead, full speed ahead. So a low energy emotion is a caution or a stop. It says, be careful or stop what you're doing. We need to talk, right? So we need those emotions. We need the access to the emotions, of course, because we need to stay safe. However, we don't need to keep diving back into them.
Right.
So, you know, you do talk psychology and, the kind of talk therapy or behavioral therapy. And quite often they go delving into virus files, in effect. And you really don't want to go into a virus file because it kind of viruses the whole computer and the whole of your brain. Better to use hypnosis or use a meditation or something which is a lot more positive and empowering. And what happens is then it just deletes the file. Mm-hmm. And on page 103 of the book, Every Word Has Power, I invented a technique called Mind Magic, which is literally like deleting a file on the computer. It just, doop, goodbye, go.
And when you talk about computer, you're actually talking about our own brain and our mind.
Totally. Because
and
it
you've
works
exactly made that
the same
comparison.
Way. Yeah,
yes.
It's amazing. It's a very, very, very easy comparison.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Even doing the searches with keywords. I mean, you've really been able to. So talk a little bit about how you see our brain and our lives working on this computer program.
Right. So basically it works like the internet. If you key a keyword into the internet, like boxes, you'll get candy boxes, you'll get coffins. It has no way of differentiating, right?
Yeah. And you'll get some sexual things too, I think.
Yes. Well, you know what was interesting? Yeah. I looked up alpha stimulator because I was looking for one of those alpha things that you hold with your hands. And I got all these sex sites came up and I was like, what? And of course then stimulate has a different connotation in that. So yeah, even when I was working on the book, I used to use high energy and low energy. I used to use negative and positive words. And I was actually using that terminology, use a positive word or use a negative word. And then I thought, you know, why don't we look up and see what words are positive now? And of course, the word positive brings up HIV sites, hepatitis C sites. It has a whole different chain of meanings than it used to have even 20 years ago. So language is growing and moving all the time. Mm-hmm. And it, of course, it's very, even positive and negative, it's very very polarity based. And I wanted to have something which is more hierarchical. So I use low energy words and high energy words to indicate, you know, a depth of a chain of anchors. So like a table doesn't have a very big chain of anchors. It really doesn't have any emotional connotation. However, mother and father and girlfriend and boyfriend and child have huge emotional impact. And what happens is then your unconscious mind immediately zooms into place because its job is to sort out emotions, right? So what happens when you put a keyword in, 20% of the keywords that your unconscious mind picks up on the internet and your brain computer has emotional impact. So words like bad, difficult, hard, they're all low energy emotions that have an emotional weight. And your unconscious mind's programmed to zoom into emotions and go, what? There's something happening. High energy emotions like excitement, joyful, happy, it's also programmed to go into those and bring you more of the same. So if there's low energy emotions around with the words you're using, it physically lowers your immune system. It's been proven that when you use low energy words and low energy thoughts, your immune system lowers. When you start using high energy words, even if you don't mean them, your immune system's improved. So you can basically fake it till you make it. Your unconscious mind has no idea of the difference, right? So if I tell you to imagine, you know, making lemon water and biting into the lemon and squeezing the lemon, and, you know, your mouth will water even though there's no real lemon there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very easy mechanism, and it is a servo mechanism. It does exactly what you tell it to do. It's you have to learn just to give it the correct instructions, and the book's all about that.
Right, which is just like a computer.
Exactly. And if you keep on giving it an instruction, it doesn't follow you through. It just means you need to change the instruction.
You know, you were talking about the newer part of the brain, the neocortex, and how if we keep our chin up, and it made me think of some of the more Eastern philosophies with regards to meditation, which is almost the opposite, though, because they make you straighten out your neck and actually tuck your chin in. And I always noticed when I would do meditation that automatically my head would go up. And then because of this new instruction that I'd received, I'd started to put it down.
Interesting.
And I didn't have the same types of experiences.
No, you wouldn't, because the third eye is located exactly where you're supposed to be looking when you're meditating, right? Just right between your where the neocortex begins. And that's a spot just up. I mean, some meditations say look up to the third eye.
Right.
You know, when you're praying in a church, you'll look up. It's the same thing. It's like that takes you out of that, the emotions, and into the neocortex, which is really where all the high energy, imagination, joyful things are. So, you know, it's like all the stained glass windows are always high up so you can actually see them.
You talk about taking charge of your life. And some of these, obviously, the magic of the mind. You've got lots of exercises in your book.
Oh, yes. Plenty optimistic tricks. Yeah, you know, really.
And, you know, one of the first ones you talk about is, you know, calibrating your decision between 1 and 10.
Right. Yeah, and it's based on applied kinesiology. So what happened was, years ago when I had Katie, I could not make a decision. I'd sit there and I'd be like, okay, I think I had a babysitter for 2 hours, and for 20 minutes I was thinking, swimming or shopping. And I finally thought, Yvonne, come on, get off the fence here. And I thought, swimming, 8, shopping, 6. Okay, swimming it is. So I went swimming, and it was like, wow, that was easy. And I started applying it to everything in my life. So even, you know, how good is it for me to eat toast this morning? How good is it for me to go out somewhere on Saturday? I even used it for a Saturday trip this weekend. And it was like, how good is it for me to go? It was a 2 out of 10. And I kept thinking, but I want to, you know. No, it's a 2 out of 10. So I'm going to trust the 2 out of 10 because I know that there's something better going to be happening if I don't go. Right. And you can use it for simple things initially. And the phrase is, how good is it for me to? Not do I want to, because want is ego and the 10%. How good is it for me to is, does it resonate with who I am and where I'm going in my life?
Right.
You know, so So if you're going on a date, for instance, and, you know, is this the love of your life? How good is it for me to go out with Robert? Well, it's a six. Okay, so I'll enjoy going out with Robert, but don't, you know, I won't be marrying him. Okay. How good is it for me to go out with a John? That's a nine or a ten, right? So the John energy must be the right energy for me right now. How good is it for me to go out with John financially? Oh, that's a two. So he needs to earn better money if I'm going to marry him, right? It's like you'll be, it's quite surprising when you start applying it to everything, you know. Even going for speaking engagements. Last year I had to do hundreds of speaking engagements to do with the book. You know, I did my tour around LA and Seattle. And suddenly I was thinking, you know what? Some of this isn't very good, either emotionally or lucratively. And I started this year thinking, how good is it for me to do this speaking engagement? And sometimes I was quite surprised when it was a four and I really trusted it and said no. So it teaches you how to say no, which is really important.
And that's something that you're suggesting we do, that we do a happiness rating in pretty much mm-hmm. every area. And
yeah. And if it's five or below, you do one small step to make it better. And the thing is, I was teaching a class last week of IT consultants. And I said, you know, on this happiness rating, I said, who got five or below in one area? And of course, yeah, they put their hands up. And I said, right, what's the very first small step you can take within 12 hours, which will make that improve a little bit? And every single one of them went to about the 10th step. Hmm. So, you know, my job isn't good. It's 5 out of 10. Get a new job. Well, get a new job is like 10 months down the line or 6 months or 3 months. The very first step to getting a new job is you go ahead and find your resume and update it, right? The second step is decide where you know, on what kind of work you want to do and do a bit more research. And what people really don't realize is the even first step before that is turn your computer on, you know. We were saying, you know, that they had someone had to go on a fitness routine, and it was join a gym, you know. And I was like, well, do you know where the gyms are near you? No. Well, the very first step to joining a gym is finding out what kind of gym you want to join, and are they near you, and which is convenient for you, how much do they cost? There's a huge slew of questions before you even join the gym. Okay. Sure. So what happens is people overface themselves. The University of Mississauga coined it the false hope syndrome. So someone who wants to release 100 pounds will immediately say, right, that's 10 pounds a week. I can be slim in 10 weeks.
Right.
Yeah. And of course, they set themselves an hour fitness program a day. Well, they're not going to keep it up more than 3 days. So what I usually say is do a 5-minute fitness program every day, and anything more than that, you're in bonus points.
Right.
You know, same with my phone calls. If I've got 20 phone calls to return, I actually think I'm only going to return one. And I'll go to the phone, pick up the phone just to phone that one person. By the time I put the phone down, I'm feeling good. So I'll go and finish the rest of them as well. If I thought about doing the 20, I'd never actually get down to, I would never get to pick the phone up.
Right.
You know. So it's really getting it to that very tiniest step and going from there.
Which is important.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And setting yourself a goal which is really realistic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my fitness routine, it's 10 minutes a day. Sometimes I'll do half an hour, sometimes I'll do 45 minutes, which means that I am really, really happy with myself that day. When I used to set myself 45 minutes a day, I was daily thinking, I'm not doing well. Well, you know, it's not a good reason to take it up again, because your unconscious mind needs that yay feeling to actually encourage you to do more of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the switch. Let's talk about what that means.
Right. The switch game is basically you need to choose a buddy, a switch buddy, because when you're speaking, you're not aware of what you're saying. When I teach a hypnotherapy class, what happens is a hypnotherapy training, we do 8 days of switching. So what happens on the very first day, people get 20 coins, poker chips, plastic ones. We don't use real money anymore. We only did it once. That was enough to convince me that it was going to be just a game. Yes, it was a very interesting day. And quite surprising what people come up with. So what happens is, as soon as, if you said something like, don't worry, I would say switch, and you'd say you'll be fine, and then you'd have to give me a coin, a poker chip. Because what happens is that your unconscious mind needs a break state to go, oh, I shouldn't use that word, what shall I use instead? And you then replace the low energy word with a high energy word. If you do it for 2 or 3 days, it'd be consistent, and you actually start, oh, I had no idea how many low energy words I was using.
Mm-hmm.
It's really quite surprising. People, everybody who does it goes, wow, and I thought I was really positive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because every other second it's like switch, switch, switch.
Yeah. No, I can mm-hmm. imagine that how powerful that would be.
It's fantastic.
There's an exercise at the back of your book. I could not think of anything for a car accident.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a car accident. My daughter came up with it, actually. She was only 8 at the time. And I said, wow, look at that car accident. She says, switch. I said, I have no idea what to switch that to, Kate. I said, have you any ideas? She said, yes. She said, a co-creation of negative events.
Okay.
And I was like, cool. That's a really good expression for that. Yeah, some of the, you know, you use these expressions like on a daily basis and you don't realize that, you know, things like, oh, that's too bad. Well, you know, the unconscious mind's gone off searching for bad things. It's not, you know, searching for making it better.
Yeah.
So when you habitually change those words, it's within about 2 weeks, you find your head is in a whole different space.
Hmm.
It's a really pleasant place to be.
Right.
You know, I mean, for instance, last summer, we had a huge flood coming into our back garden. The rain was coming down. There was like 3 foot of water just pouring into my swimming pool and it was all mud. Some bright spot built the swimming pool below the main road. And of course, I put my Wellington boots on. I put my rubber boots on. Ran out with a spade, intending to divert the flow. Right, and of course, I'm there charging out with my spade. And I stood there and I went, "Oh, that's so not happening." It was just like, and I was fully expecting that. Oh, that's it. The swim pool's ruined. Da 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 da. And what came into my head was, "Wow, oh great! I can persuade Will to get me one of those bottom eaters now for the pool, so I don't have to do all the work. And my tomatoes are going to be absolutely huge this year." And I was like, "Whoa, that was an interesting place for my head to go. It just didn't go into the old negative space, the old poor me. You know what was happening? It just went straight to the positive results of what would be happening. Yeah, the possibilities, which is fantastic." Mm-hmm.
I could see where many people could use a partner for switch.
Yes, that's true.
I think definitely you need one because I think we're not aware enough.
Well, you're not aware. And what's interesting is when you choose your partner, you need to choose them very carefully because what happens is after about a week of it, you'll be one or the other will be saying, stop it, stop it. I can't even say anything without you switching me. And it's like, yes, exactly. You know, look where your headspace is going all the time. And what are your results getting when you go into that space?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so our mind, one of the first things is looking at the prime directive. Now, this is our unconscious mind.
Yeah. And the unconscious mind's prime directive is to keep you alive. Quite simple. Its job is to keep you healthy, keep the body preserved, and it will do anything possible to do that. Now, the thing is, on a normal day-by-day basis, you know, it will tell you if something's hot, it will move you away. As a child, your parents override that. So they will say, you know, you have to do that. You have to give that to your brother because it's a really nice thing to do, even though you wanted it. So, you know, they override a lot of the decisions you make. No, you can't wear that today. You have to wear this without giving a reason. So not only is the unconscious mind not learning the new reason or any reasoning behind it, but it's just learning that's not possible because my mother said so. Okay. When you then come to make your own decisions later, you'll still do the same things without even realizing that the program's already running. You know, I mean, I hear loads of people saying, put your coat on because you'll get a cold if you don't.
Right.
Well, you know, that's not true. It's like,
it's not.
You may get cold, but you won't get a cold unless there's germs around, right? So it's like we say these things and we come out with these things without actually thinking through what we're actually telling our children.
Right.
You know, we'll say things like, you can't have everything, you know. Well, why not? Why would we say that? Why would we limit a child's imagination from being very tiny?
Yeah.
You know, it's something like when Katie used to tell the truth, I would say, thank you so much for telling me the truth. That's really very good. What could we do to make sure that doesn't happen again? You know, and I'd hear people saying to her, whoa, that's terrible. You did this. What can we do to punish you? And I'm like, wow, what a different way of looking at things, you know. And she said the other day, I've always told you the truth of everything. She said, there's no reason for me to not tell you the truth because you never judge.
Right.
You know, it's always solution oriented. It's always, well, what can we do to change that or make sure it doesn't happen again? Whereas, you know, other people around her, relatives and things, have said, how dare you? No, you can't do this. Stop doing that. It really doesn't give any child their own resources if you don't instruct right. them on you know, well, what could we do better next time, or how can we improve it?
So when we're talking about the switch and getting into those more positive, mm-hmm. high energy words, so mm-hmm. we want to make sure our health and well-being
yeah.
is somehow included in our
exactly. So if you can do, if you're doing affirmations, if you include health and well-being as part of the affirmation, your unconscious mind has to join in. It's an override. It's like 100% necessary that if you use that word, it's in. It's like, I'm listening. So if you say, I'm ready to be rich now, it's going, cool, me too. Yay. That's great. Right? If you say, I'm ready to be rich now and I'd like $10,000, please right now, because $10,000 will mean I can take a holiday and relax and live longer. It's going to go, right, I'm off searching for you. And it literally joins in your life.
Right. And so also adding in the because and the now is important.
Because and the now are really important. The because is for the conscious mind. So the conscious mind needs a reason. So when you're talking to children, it's do this because, even if it's because it's a good thing to do. You know, it really doesn't have to be a good reason as long as you use the word because. It promotes compliance. And then the now is for the unconscious mind, because now is a word like pressing enter on the keyboard. So if you press enter on the keyboard, you can type as much as you like into the internet. And it's only when you press enter that it actually puts it into action. So if right. you say, I want it now, it goes, oh, really? There's a time thing on this? Yeah.
Yeah, we'd like a time thing on it.
Yes. Yeah, and that's another thing about goal setting, Laurie, is when you set a goal, you really want to be able to date it, time it, put it in the future timeline. You want to actually lock it into place. You can literally click your fingers to lock it into place so that your unconscious mind knows it's sometime in the future and it has to go along to do that. So, you know, March the 10th, 2010, at 4:00 in the afternoon, I want a payment of $15,000. Thank you very much. You see the check in your hand for whatever it is. And it's very important that you actually date it, time it, really make it clear.
Right. You... And a whole bunch of things there came up, but as you talk about that, also to clear the haves, coulds, and shoulds, and tries.
Yeah, because all those haves and coulds and shoulds are in the past. Oh, I wish I could have done that. I should have done that. Instead of thinking, wow, what's the lesson to be taken from that? Let's move on from it. Okay. Now, try is an interesting word. It needs to be out of everybody's vocabulary, because try indicates failure. We actually use try in hypnosis to make sure that someone fails.
Oh, really?
Yes. So what we say is, go ahead and try to open your eyelids only when you absolutely know you can't, right? And the word try, it indicates it's an impossibility. So your unconscious mind goes, what? And it never gets there. So you say, no, try the food, see if you like it, try to do this. You're actually saying, go ahead and don't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's like, you know, throw a pen on the floor and then say, okay, try and pick it up. Well,
yeah. You
either pick it up or you don't.
Well, if you hold a pen, what's interesting is, if you hold, an interesting thing for you to do at home, is hold a pen as though you're going to write with it. You hold it and then look at it and think, try and drop the pen. It's actually impossible. Your fingers don't move.
Yeah.
When you just say drop the pen, they just do that and it drops immediately. Really cool. I usually use that as a little demo, and it's like that you can see people's faces going trying to drop the pen, and they go, it's not working. Correct. So yeah, fantastic. And words are brilliant. I love playing with words. It's an amazing thing to do, just to explore them.
Mm-hmm. So, well, you say, you know, change happens to have a clear intent, to, you know, heighten your emotion, to have gratitude and flexibility.
Yeah. Yeah. Because quite often what we want isn't for our highest good. Okay. I know the very first keynote speaking engagement I got years ago was a hypnotherapy conference, and I turned up. I was really excited. There were going to be 200 people there. I was going to be teaching. I was going to be, yay. And I arrived in the middle of a hurricane.
Oh.
I was the only plane that got in that day. There were 10 people actually turned up, locals. The hotel was flooded. There wasn't electricity. No. It was just like, what was this about? And I actually ended up moving the whole conference to another hotel. The people who ran the conference weren't even there. They finally turned up. And it was really interesting. At the end of it, I was like, what was that about? You know, and I actually went to the Edgar Cayce Institute and did the little labyrinth there. And I stood at the beginning of the labyrinth and thought, why? Just tell me why. And as I got to the center, the sun came out and I just heard one word, acceptance. And then I suddenly got in my head, this is not the way you should be going. This isn't the way to be going. There's a different plan. And I thought, how interesting. And now looking back, if I'd actually been really successful that weekend, it would have niched me into hypnosis instead of taking me to write the book, as I came back and I started writing the book and it took me into a whole different direction. Mm-hmm. So looking back, it was actually really lucky and fortunate that that happened. So, you know, there is a bigger plan. I do believe we have a higher plan and a higher purpose.
Right. And you tell us how to breathe.
Yes, because that breathing is really important. When you are stressed, when you're putting yourself in that anxiety position, you hold the diaphragm right up inside your chest, right? So in order to let that breath go, number one, you put your hand on your belly and actually breathe out as though you are pushing your hands out. That actually relaxes the diaphragm, right? And that just allows the unconscious mind to say, good, the danger's over, right? Once you've relaxed the diaphragm, then you do a breath called the 7-7-11. And it's breathing in for seven, like holding it for seven, two, three, four, five, six, seven, and breathing out for 11. And that breathing out for 11 forces all the carbon outside out so that when you breathe in again, you take in that fresh energy. It gives you an instant rush of energy. You feel great. And it just clears your head up. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's seven in, hold it for seven, 11 out. Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
It really does work, actually. It's quite, if you just do it three times, it gives you this whoosh of energy. It's very good.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big chapter in your book on self-worth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know,
because that's what it's all about.
And most of us, you know, we self-confidence and that... Mm-hmm. You know, knowing and intention and being just being clear is for some people a stretch.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Good thinking. Good switching. The self-worth, that when I'm teaching a hypnosis class, they'll say, well, what if they don't know what they're there for? Because, you know, what appears, they'll say, I've not got a good relationship, or I've not got good money, or I've not got this. The reason that things don't work for you is that you don't have enough self-worth or self-value. And it's about deserving, you know, and it's parents saying to the kids, you know, you can't have that. Why not? Because you can't. Well, hello. You know, you've got to have a good reason for not having it, or simply just say, you know, that's not possible right now. Leave it as an open question instead of it's not a possibility. When parents close down possibilities for kids, what they do is they limit their resources for later. You know, Katie, for instance, would always say, I'm entering this competition on the TV. And I would say, well, there's a lot of kids entering it, you know, because I didn't want to set her up for disappointment. You know what? She won everything she entered. It was amazing. Really? We used to get T-shirts through the post. Like 2 years ago, she won two guitars and an iPod. And she's like, I won that iPod, Mom. I'm like, no. An iPod's like $150 at the time. And she was like, yeah, I won it. Look. And I'm like, wow, that's amazing. And I never limited her. I always said, well, let's do it anyway. Let's open up the possibilities. And she just accepted that that was the way life was. Therefore, she deserved it. And that was fine. And it really did work. And it, you know, it was when she went to school and a few people started saying to her, well, you know, that's not possible. And for a little while, for about 6 to 8 months, she didn't have the luck she'd been having. And then suddenly she said, no, you know what, Mom, I'm going to do it anyway. She got over that. And these days, all the kids say, you know, we want to touch Katie for good luck. Because literally, she thinks it, she does it, and it happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it clears away the clouds when you have that self-worth, when you believe that you deserve to have it all.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. One of the things I loved in that chapter was you were talking to somebody about asking for help.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because people have got this idea that they have to give help but not receive it. And it was a chap I was actually doing a hypnosis with, and he said, well, what about receiving help? Oh, I couldn't possibly ask for help. And I'm just like, well, what do you feel like when you give people help. And he said, fantastic, it feels really good. And I said, well, that's really selfish of you. And he went, what? And I said, yeah, like, why don't you want to give that experience to other people? And he just sat there and he said, I'm going to have to really rethink this one. Because it really is, if you ask for help, it gives someone a pleasurable experience, because, you know, we're all about a group species has to help each other in order to survive. And it we're programmed to actually have pleasurable feelings when we help people.
Right.
So, you know, asking for help is actually a strength. It actually makes the group stronger.
And then you have the people that are always asking for help.
Oh, yes, the needy ones. And
that you also go into,
yes,
and help us,
yes,
with giving, yeah, us some, yeah, ways of saying,
saying
no.
Saying how to say no. You say that doesn't work for me immediately, right? Because I used to say yes to everything, and I lived my whole life resenting, and it was just not fun. And finally, I was like, you know what? I have to have a decision-making process, number one. So that was where I said, you know, how good is it for me to help this person on Saturday? And six is okay, I'll give them an hour. Seven, eight, nine, or 10, absolutely. Do it with an open heart. Freedom, doesn't matter, you don't want to reward. Five or below, they have to really, really pay you or do something really fabulous for you if you're going to do it.
Or as you say,
if they don't do something fabulous for you, you need to do something fabulous for yourself. You need to reward yourself. You know, and five or below, usually the answer is no, I'm not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And you just say, oh, it's really love to, but it doesn't work for me on Saturday. They go, oh, okay. They never say, why not? Whereas if you said, no, I can't make it, they'll say, why not?
Yeah.
So, and then you're kind of making excuses. So, yeah, it's really important that you get your boundaries set and work out what's really good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, a good example is since the book came out, since Every Word Has Power came out, I've been doing a lot of article writing. And I've put myself through the mill just, you know, writing these articles, because what happens is the magazine calls you, says, would you write an article? You say, yes, I'd love to. And then when you've written it, they want you to sign a disclaimer that says you will never use the words again. It's their article. They don't pay you for it. And I had two articles to write, and someone turned around to me and said, are you getting any money for this? I'm like, no. Are you getting prestige for it? Yes, a bit. Are you getting any business from it? I'm like, no. And she said, well, why are you doing it then? I'm like, good point, you know. I mean, it's very nice to be in Martha Stewart's magazine, but I got no phone calls, no emails, no nothing from it. Yeah, it's like you think it's a really good way to get out there, and it just gives you a lovely name, and it doesn't really benefit in the long term. So I finally learned to say no to that, unless I love it. I mean, if it's a magazine I really believe in, I'll say yes, of course I will. You know, if I believe it's really going to help someone, or I'll just say, you know what, call me again in 2 months if I've got some time on my hands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it becomes very easy then it's what is coming back. Even if it's only a hug or a meal or something coming back, there has to be some kind of gratification if you don't feel great about it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about quantum mechanics, how we are both the microcosm and the macrocosm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love quantum physics. It's great. When I got my teeth into it, I was like, wow, this is really cool stuff. Basically, the principle of quantum mechanics says that if it's not observed, it doesn't exist. So what I do quite often to prove something, I'll reach into my handbag or reach into a purse or a drawer and say to someone, did you know this was here before I showed it you? Okay, and they'll say, well, no. And what happens is then it becomes true to them that that thing exists. Before that, it wasn't there for them. They didn't observe it. Therefore, it wasn't in their reality, right? And given that we take a snapshot of reality every second, we're only aware of 7 pieces of information. That's why phone numbers are in groups of 7. In actual fact, your unconscious mind sorts out 2 million pieces of information every second, puts it into 126 bits, and then you're aware of 7. So reality really isn't that real.
Mm.
It's like a quick do-do-do-do. We're picking up a minute proportion of it. Now, people say, you know, well, where's God? Well, you are God. It's part of you. You are part of God. It's like a one and the same. And how I usually demonstrate that is, if you think of your hand doesn't describe you. However, every molecule of your hand has the same DNA as every DNA in the rest of your body. Every bit of DNA in the rest of your body. And that does describe the whole of you. Between each of those cells is quantum space. And it's the same space that makes up the universe. So you're a microcosm of the macrocosm, one and the same time.
Hmm.
It's really fascinating. you know, and the principle goes forward to words. So if a word ceases to be used, theoretically, then the concept could all theoretically disappear. So if we completely remove the word hatred from our vocabulary altogether and use another word like not like very much or, you know, something a bit milder, hatred will cease to exist.
Mm.
And that's phenomenal for world peace.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And even if you look in a dictionary 100 years ago, a lot of the words that are used, we have no concept of what they are today.
No.
It's like, what was that word exactly? You know, very fascinating.
Yeah. Or trying to come up with how they came up with the word is very interesting.
Yeah. And it's a growing, it's a living language. You know, language is living, it's moving, it's growing all the time. There's like a, I don't know, it's a billion words or something.
Yeah,
a million. The English language hit a million words or something the other day. It was like really amazing.
Mm-hmm. So the hidden variable, which is part of quantum mechanics and quantum physics,
yes,
but it's
the hidden variable is that there is something we don't know about, and the reason we don't know about it is that they've tried to measure it and they've tried to work out what it is that will influence. It's the random factor, the factor that brings in this completely apparently arbitrary circumstance, right? So you've got everything planned and something suddenly goes whoosh and goes haywire. And what happens is they know that the hidden variable exists simply because of its effect on other things. So they know if they're doing an experiment, if there's five scientists expecting the same result, they will get that result exactly. If the five scientists expect a different result, they will get that result too, okay? Because the observer has an effect on the observed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's phenomenal that really, and that's why a lot of experiments are done blindfolded. You know, they actually cut out a lot of the variables so that they get a consistent result every time, right? Now, I'll how this works, let me give you an example. Manchester University did a study of gay people, gay guys. And they said, you know, one of the reasons that, one of the ways to tell a gay guy is that the first finger is shorter than the third finger on the hand.
Come on.
Wait for this. This is really interesting. They noticed a lot of gay guys had that first finger shorter than the third finger, than the ring finger, okay? And they said, that's really interesting. That must mean that being gay, you know, having that short first finger means that you're gay. Well, guess what? In palmistry, that short finger simply means that you don't have a great deal of self-esteem. So there are just as many non-gay people with that finger as gay. And this was their final proof that, yeah, a lot of the gay community don't have self-esteem. So, of course, their finger's going to be shorter. What they hadn't done is done a test with the rest of the population, right? So their experiment was purely based around finding the one result, and they found it. Okay,
that's funny.
It's hilarious. It's like, wow. You can totally fool yourself into anything, you know. And here's the good news: what you believe to be true does become the truth. So if you walk around believing you're fantastic and you get great results and you're really lucky, you will get exactly that.
Right.
You know, and it may not happen at first, but after 21 days, which is when the habit kicks in, when you form the habit after 21 days, suddenly there you are having good luck and saying, "See, it works," and it does. It's fabulous stuff. It's really cool.
Mm-hmm. I like when you talk about infinite abundance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because infinite abundance is amazing. I mean, you look how many leaves are on a tree. You look, you know, how many pieces of grass there are. And people tend to think that there's only just enough to get by you, that you can't access it. And of course, that's not the truth, because, you know, they've been talking this last 12 months about the recession. Well, I've made more money in the last 12 months than I've ever made in my whole life. So that for me, there's no recession. For a lot of people, the recession isn't happening, because it's not part of their reality. They don't believe that, right? And if you literally just think, well, the recession is outside of me, it's certainly not here, and you're living in that infinite abundance, what you do is you attract in that infinite abundance automatically. You know, it's like relationships. I used to truly believe that there weren't many decent guys out there. And, you know, after 39 years, I suddenly sat down one day and I thought, there's only one person picking the guys, and it's me. So maybe it's not the guys that need to change. Maybe it's my method of choosing them. And it actually was, because I started actually, whoever I was attracted to, I would actually think, okay, you're not my man, because I'm really attracted to you. Because, of course, I loved helping people and healing them, because I went for the ones who needed the most help. And then I started going for guys who I really was not attracted to, but looked like they had their act together. And it took me a few weeks and I started actually getting attracted in there. And what a difference. I met all these fantastic guys. It was really very surprising to me how many nice guys there were out there. And it was because I wasn't even searching for them. I was searching for the ones that were right, I thought, for me.
Right.
And they were the ones that needed the help. Quite surprising.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go into our unconscious mind again, because I think that's, you know, an area that we really, well, I guess it's hard to understand because it's
not
our
easy
conscious.
Even. Not easy.
Oh, yes,
even. Yes, exactly.
But it's because it's unconscious.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So
it is outside your consciousness. That's the whole point.
Right.
And Milton Erickson used to use the word unconscious mind because subconscious implies it's just inside your awareness. Well, it's not. You can't tell me how you beat your heart. You can't tell me how you digest your food. It's just happens, right? It's totally outside of your control. Your conscious mind can influence it, but it can't control it. So, you know, fear or thoughts about anxiety will increase your heartbeat, will increase your blood pressure, etc. However, you digesting your food is something totally outside of your awareness. Okay, keeping you alive is totally outside your awareness. So it really is an amazing device. It's a quantum device. It's like it's totally unlimited in its power and its abundance. It's an amazing mechanism, right? And it's a group mechanism too. So as a species, we have this amazing connection with each other. You know, you only have to have a baby and be a mother to know that. You know the second that child's in trouble. You know the second the child's crying. It's like there's this connection which is amazing. You know, same with parents. You'll sense that something's not right. Okay, even last Tuesday, my daughter said to me, "Oh, I'm really sad today, Mom." I said, "Me too." I said, "There's obviously someone not really well." And we heard that day that a friend of ours had gone into hospital for a cancer operation and died on the operating table and then came back.
Oh.
He his lungs collapsed and he was like,
wow,
so close to death. And we picked it up on a subconscious level, on an unconscious level. And I knew it wasn't us because we had nothing happening to do that. Because we were thinking so much about him, the thoughts had just been transferred over.
Hmm.
You know, so.
I like how you talk about the fact that our unconscious mind have no thoughts or feelings. It's mm-hmm. very neutral. We're the ones
totally neutral. Totally neutral. It's a servo mechanism. It does what you tell it to do. So literally, if you think of it as the internet, if you're at the computer and you've turned on the internet, it's not going to say to you, "Hey, there's a really good idea here." You know, it will.
Well, sometimes Google does that.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it's starting to get that kind of idea. However, it's not just going to jump out and give you solutions unless you're searching that area, right? So if you're keying in about health, it's not necessarily going to give you some great money ideas.
Right.
Right? So what you're concentrating on is really where it's going to react or respond. And it will give you ideas based around that thought process and that response. And you have to be clearly thinking about something in order to get it to respond. Now, if all you're thinking about is how much debt you're in or how many problems you have, it's going to give you lots more of the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And how our willpower
uh-huh.
doesn't work.
Willpower doesn't work because it's your conscious mind. You make decisions consciously. So your conscious mind picks up from the five senses. It smells, it tastes, it listens, it sees, it hears, and thinks about things and makes decisions. So you make a decision consciously, give the conscious decision to your unconscious mind based on what you know at the time, right? So if you see a dog coming along, if it's got four legs, its tail's wagging, its tongue sticking out, you probably assume that everything that does that is a dog, okay? Because it's a time-saving mechanism too. Your mind is programmed to build in habits and make habits actually pleasurable, simply so that you don't have to keep on doing. You don't have to learn to tie your shoelace every single day. Once you've got it. The program's in and it's done. What happens though is occasionally we'll put in a program which isn't so self-supportive. That isn't that a parent will say to a child, "You can't have that ever." And what happens is because of the tonality which is used, remember it's 38%, the child goes, "Oh, really?" And suddenly that's a forever program. Mm-hmm. And suddenly that child will never, ever be able to go into that space again because it's almost like a locked door. So those decisions we make and the decisions that are put upon us by people outside us before we're 7 years old are the ones that kind of stick, and we need to revisit those and renew them and re-empower them, you know, and just say, you know, like when you've got a Word document and you've changed it and then you close the document, you didn't remember to save it. And then you open it and go, oh, I can't believe that I did all that work and didn't save it, right? That's exactly how willpower works. So you do the document, you change it, you think, right, today I'm going to be fit, I'm healthy, I'm going to do this. Keep fit routine. And if you don't do it consistently, you don't save the program, then it's just going to keep flipping back to its old programming.
Right.
Very simple. It's just, you know, you have to make sure that the program's saved.
How do we do that?
There's a few ways, actually. I mean, repetition is one. Repetition is an easy one. Another one is actually, especially with health, is to use tonality. And I've noticed this recently. The first time I recognized it, I used to get really, really not good migraines, and there were 3-day jobs. I mean, I was really, really not healthy at all with them. Usually it happened when I was under stress and, you know, I was really, really stressed. And there was one health fair, it was a weekend health fair, and it was a 3-day fair, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And I woke up the Saturday when I was like, oh no, please, come on. It's been like 6 months preparation for this fair. I have to be, you know, healthy today. And I just sat straight up in bed and I said, okay, that's it. We're done with that. You have to get rid of this migraine right now. I know I'm stressed. I know. Thank you for the message. I got it. Thank you. Cool. Stop it right now. Make me healthy, because by being my literally having a clear head today, I'm going to be able to do this next 2 days. And then I'm going to take a rest as promised. Right. Within 10 minutes, it was completely gone. I was like, oh, my, that was very interesting. So if you give your unconscious mind that message with tonality, actually tell it off, it will actually comply. It'll go along with things. Very, very interesting. Hmm. I do it quite often with pain relief. When I've got someone in for hypnosis and pain relief, well, I'll say to the unconscious mind, right now, you're going right against your prime directive, which is to keep this person healthy and alive. Pain is thank you for the message. We got it. We're doing everything we can. The very fact that this person's here in the chair right now means that they're listening to you. Find other ways to give the message, please.
Hmm.
Right, and it will. They'll go, wow, that's interesting. It's completely gone.
Hmm.
It's really very interesting. You literally have to give it a command.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. No being polite to it. No being polite. So with the conscious mind, the conscious mind needs that politeness.
Hmm.
It's like, oh, Laurie, please. You know, it's getting really warm in here. Would you mind just opening the window for me? It'd be really nice if you do that. Thank you so much. Okay. If you said that to your unconscious mind or to the internet, you get all kinds of different results on thank yous and much and, you know, please and all the other things surrounding the command, right? So what you do with the unconscious mind and the internet is you say, open the window now. Keep it simple. It's like clear. Right, you'll get the results a lot better because you're not kind of putting confusion.
Right, and that's when we're dealing with the unconscious, because you say that to your conscious or somebody else's conscious mind, they'll say, yeah, right.
I don't think so. Yeah.
And I think a few more choice words would go with
exactly. Yeah, I mean, I'll literally do that in a hypnotherapy class. It's so funny. I'll just look at someone and say, "Open the door now," and they'll go, "Excuse me," and you'll see them going, well, excuse me, I won't be spoken to that, you know. And then I'll say, oh, I'd love you to open the door now if you don't mind. It's a little warm in here, thank you. And they go, oh, absolutely. They're out of the chair before you've even finished speaking, right? So that they need to be treated in two totally different ways. The conscious mind, your interaction with other people, needs all this nice flowery, lots of grammar, lots of please and thank yous. Your unconscious mind is directed, clear directions.
Right.
You know. It's like booking a holiday.
Right.
You know, you go into the travel agent, you say, I'd like to go on holiday, please. You can say, where? I don't know. Where do you think? I don't know. Where do you think? You need to make the decision. And your unconscious mind says exactly like that. It wants you to make the decisions. It doesn't want, you know, it wants you to feel good. So you need to be the one to say, Hawaii on the beach, April the 10th.
Right.
You know?
And I'm guessing also that magic of the mind techniques mm-hmm. works really well mm-hmm. with your unconscious. In fact, that's pretty much yes. what you came up with them for.
Yeah, the magic of the mind technique is fantastic. It's how to clear a negative emotion in less than a minute. And it works literally on the principle of NLP, hypnosis, and quantum physics. It really does work with the microcosm and the macrocosm. It's a clear instruction. The way to speak to your unconscious mind is this. Clear the root cause and preserve the positive lesson. That's the only two instructions it needs in order to comply with clearing a negative emotion. And remember, your negative emotions are there for it's a messaging system. And it also works with limiting decisions too. And I'm not sure how it works with limiting decisions, except that it knows what to do. It just knows there's a virus. If you tell it, this is a virus file about this limiting decision about not being able to be so successful or you know, accept success, it will automatically go and clear it, whatever. And it will go and replace it with the not the new file. It's actually realigning you with the abundant universe.
Okay, so how does, so you don't know how that works, but let's give an example.
So, say for instance, there's a lot of anger around. You get angry at someone, you're at work all day, and of course what happens is you grudge harbor then. Someone says something to you and you go, huh, that person, you know what she did yesterday? And you know what she did the day before? In fact, she always does this. And you know, before you know it, the whole day has been gone in just grudge harboring. And you know, you're listing the things, you're writing down the things that did wrong, right? I mean, it's like, whoa, so satisfying to get everybody to agree with you. And then, you know, because we like to be right, right? Rather than do that, it's much easier just to go into the tea room and just, you know, say, release the root cause of the anger and frustration at this person, preserve the positive lessons for my health and benefit, and Bob's your uncle, it's done. And that's on page 103 of the book, Every Word Has Power. Gives you the whole technique, you know, you get how to access the unconscious mind, the prefrontal cortex, where to put the new instruction in your physical body, because your physical body actually holds on to those emotions. It's programmed to hold on to emotions. That's where your storage vessel is.
Mm-hmm.
So very, very interesting stuff.
And so you're saying it works with, now you also recommend to work with, is it anger?
Mm-hmm. Anger, sadness, fear, and guilt in that order.
Right.
Because the anger is top dog. If you've got sadness around, usually it means you've repressed some anger somewhere. If you've got depression, for sure you've repressed anger. You know, I had a guy yesterday who emailed me and said he couldn't do the course because he was depressed. And I said, oh, that's a really good reason for you to do the course, because you're going to learn how to release anger. And he said, I'm not angry, I'm just depressed. And I emailed him back and said, we have a little bit to learn here. It's about, you know, you've sat on the anger so long until it's not being expressed, so it becomes compressed and then depressed, right? And he said, no, it's a chemical imbalance, I've been told. I'm like, okay, yes, we have a little bit of learning to go on here. And I just said, okay, that's fine. You know, if they're so determined to hang on to the limiting decisions that they can't even open it up, then, and what that means is that it's serving him to be depressed.
Sure.
He's getting attention. He doesn't have to work. There's obviously something. There's what's called a secondary gain, and if there's a secondary gain there, you have to replace that secondary gain with a better gain so that they'll actually go and do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if someone giving up smoking, for instance, thinks that they're getting great benefit from it, you have to replace it with a better benefit in order for them to give up smoking.
Right.
You know, so if someone comes to me and says, I want to give up smoking because my mom says it's not good, or my wife doesn't like living with it, they're not going to give up smoking. They enjoy it too much.
Right.
You know, so if they say, I want to give up smoking because it really is affecting my health and I really, really want to stop, 100% they're going to give it up.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can also then clear our beliefs, you're saying, with this technique.
Yeah, clear your beliefs. And what's fascinating is you don't even need to know why you had that belief, where it came from, as long as you say clear the limiting belief about XYZ. So for instance, someone might want to change the job but not be able to go for job interviews because they're really scared about not getting another job. Well, that doesn't get you anywhere. It just takes you around in a loop. Okay, and it's a safety device that they're sitting there thinking they're safe. And in actual fact, they're not safe, because getting a better job will get more money. So you simply do the mind magic, do the technique physically as well as verbally. And it's just simply clear the limiting belief about me not being successful with a job.
Right.
A new job. Or clear the limiting belief about me not taking chances. Or clear the limiting belief about having fear about taking chances. If you can name the file, and this is where you do name a negative file, your unconscious mind goes, oh, we have a file, do it on that one. Yeah, look at this. Hey, I can clear that one for you if you like. Right, and it just completely deletes it.
That's cool.
It's like clearing away little clouds above your head. So those negative beliefs and limiting decisions and beliefs are like little clouds above your head. If you simply remove the clouds, if you laser through them, the sun shines through automatically. You don't need to replace it with anything.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. You've given us a lot of information, and we have enough information probably for the next show as well, because we didn't get to go into a lot of the relationship stuff and you know, all of that stuff that we haven't quite gotten into. So I think you have some things coming up. Did you want to talk
about? Yes, I do. I have the Everybird Has Power Awards coming up, and we need some nice entries for that. There's a $1,000 first prize. There's a prize from that's from AMP Talent in Toronto, a beautiful talent agency. They're also doing a talent competition for teenagers. If you want to get in touch with us, amptalent.ca. We've got Speakers Gold giving a prize, a one-day workshop on speaking and how to make a six-figure income from it. And a 500, and that's it's Kathleen Fillmore at Speakers Gold. And a third prize of, or second prize, joint second prize, $500 photography session with Yanka. And she is fantastic, Yanka of Toronto. So yeah, we want 300 words or around 300 words. Something that someone said to you that really empowered your life, that made you feel wonderful, that made you go, wow, and it just changed your way of thinking about things. We want good stories that are going to inspire and help others.
Nice.
That's the big goal. And we're presenting the prizes on December the 5th at the Inspirational Lifestyles Breakfast at the Doctor's House in Kleinburg.
Nice.
Beautiful, beautiful place. So with Diana Di Donato. Yeah, she's really good. Wonderful woman. So yeah, it's a really, the whole of Toronto is getting together to make people more positive and empower people. So yeah, if you go online, of course, to enter the competition, it's kind of useful to know where to enter, right? It's globalwelcome.com, G-L-O-B-A-L, welcome.com.
Nice.
And if you go to there, the prize comes up straight away. You click the little cup that says awards and go straight in and enter the competition. We'd love to have your entries. Pass the word around.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also where they can reach you.
Yes, globalwelcome.com. And I'm Don Mills and Shepherd in Toronto.
Awesome.
When I'm not traveling all over the world.
Yes. Which you are doing
a lot.
All right. Well, it's been a great show.
Thank you, Laurie. It was great. Thank you so much. Wonderful.
All right.
Excellent job.
We'll see you next month.
Oh, yeah. Let's go and have some fun.
All right.